Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for May the 8th, 2020. This is episode number 5. So on today's show, we'll be talking about these headlines, the Tesla customer data leak and other Tesla topics, the Audi Q4 e-tron coming in 2021 has a rumored price, and we drive the Nissan Leaf Plus and the Chevy Bolt EV. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dominic Chioni, Inside EV's editor and Inside EV's forum moderator. Joining us today, we have Tom Logney, longtime EV advocate and Inside EV's editor. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And finally, we have Kyle Connor from the Out of Spec Motoring and One Lap YouTube channels. He also puts together awesome videos for the new Inside EV's YouTube channel. Go and subscribe and tap that notification bell. And finally, we're joined by all of you because, to paraphrase the immortal words of one Bill O'Reilly, we're doing it live. So this means you can chat with us via the YouTube chat and ask us questions or leave comments. So welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. We have lots to talk about today. So before we get to the news, though, what new vehicles do we have charging up in your driveways? Tom, you have something from Nissan, I believe.
Yeah, so I had the Nissan Leaf SL Plus for a week and put it through the usual tests. In particular, we did a nice 70-mile-an-hour highway range test where I have a set course here in New Jersey on the turnpike where I drive up and down in a loop to try to negate any elevation change. And the Leaf Plus SL is rated at 215 miles per charge. The SV and the SL are rated at 215 miles per charge, and the Leaf S Plus is 226. So the less expensive version of the Leaf actually goes 11 miles further, and that's because it has smaller and narrower tires, and it doesn't have as much standard equipment, so it's lighter. So you actually, this is one of the cases where less gets you more with the Leaf. But driving at a constant 70 miles an hour, I was able to go 185 miles per charge, a little short of the EPA range rating. You don't always necessarily expect to get the EPA range rating when you're driving at a steady 70 miles an hour on the highway. But we like to give our readers an idea of about what you can expect on a long highway drive with electric vehicles. Now, no range test is perfect. You can do 20 different range tests and get 20 different results. We like to stress that. We don't like to say, well, look here, the Leaf can only go 185 miles per charge. That's not why we do our range tests. It's just to give customers another data point that they can access and say, look, when we're driving on the highway at about 70 miles an hour in these conditions, temperature-wise, you could probably expect the car to go somewhere between 180 and 190 miles per charge.
How did you like the car besides the range?
You know, the Leaf is a good family electric vehicle. It's got a ton of space in the back. It's a hatchback. It's got a lot of room. And, you know, it serves a purpose for what that type of customer is looking for. Family sedan, maybe you have kids. You're not going to do a lot of long range driving because one of the Achilles heels on the Leaf definitely is charging. The Leaf Plus is capable of charging at higher speeds than 50 kilowatts. But unfortunately, in my area and for most of the U.S., I think there's some in California, there might be some in some isolated areas. There's no DC fast chargers that can charge faster than 50 kilowatts with CHAdeMO. So you're really limited on to 50 kilowatts, which really hurts long distance traveling. If you're going to go, from charger to charger and travel hundreds of miles. And the Leaf actually makes it even worse because they don't have a good thermal management system. You really get the rate of charge rate really degrades if you hop from DC fast charger to DC fast charger. As the battery gets warmer, the Leaf throttles back the charge rate that you can accept, and it really charges slow on long trips. It was probably the most disappointing thing on the Leaf that I had when I tested it last week was the charge rate. It really throttles back when you get close to 100% charge, slower than other electric vehicles that we've tested. In fact, once you get over 75, 80%, unless you need that range, you have to unplug and move on because it really charges slowly. It took me about an hour and a half to get the car from 97% to 100%. I needed to start the range test at 100%. Now, I know most people won't do that. They'll just unplug at 95 or 90% and move on. So that wouldn't be a problem everybody would have. But it just shows how much Nissan throttles back the charge rate once it gets to a higher state of charge, much more so than the other EVs we've tested.
And that issue, I think, is popularly referred to as rapid gate, as in yeah. You can't rapid charge on successive charges at a high rate of speed, right?
Yep. And it definitely, it's legitimate. It's not made up. The Leaf really does throttle it back and slow it down when you charge successively.
That's interesting to hear because there was a supposedly software update changes, and this battery was supposed to be changed from a chemistry perspective to allow higher rates in warmer temps. And it's not even that warm out. Yeah. I don't know if I talked about it on the show, but we have a friend with a Leaf and I took it last summer. This is not a Leaf Plus, but it was before the software update for Rapid Gate. And I drove it kind of hard around town. The battery temps creeping up into the red. Plug that thing into a CHAdeMO. It's like 18 kilowatt. Woohoo! It's like, yeah, you know, how are you supposed to go anywhere in that car? Yeah, that's insane. It's crazy to me that they can sell a new electric vehicle after all of the problems without active thermal management.
That's the key, isn't it? It's just like relying on the ambient air temperature is just not on these days. So even I drive a Renault Zoe, and at least that has an air blower. So it uses the car's real basic heating and cooling air system.
Yeah, the old Soul had something like that as well.
Yeah, it makes a racket. It's loud, but it's doing something. It's blowing air over the battery. It's doing something to rely on the ambient after all of the problems that Nissan had as well with early Leafs in hot areas like Arizona, where batteries were being ruined because of temperature, of everything, of all the, you know, having their own battery company as well, you know, having that investment in not just being a customer, but owning the technology as well. They had such a head start with it. And you have to wonder what's gone on there in terms of the management and the people who have been allowed, or rather probably not allowed actually, to develop that early technology they had to get a car on the market with a 62 kilowatt hour battery. Although, Tom, it's not 62, is it? What, 50 usable?
It's 56 usable. Okay. The gross size of the pack is 62, and you get 56 kilowatt hour usable.
And do you know where that buffer is? Is it top or bottom or both? Or because for it to take that long to charge to 100%, I would think the whole buffer is at the bottom of the pack.
Yeah, I don't know how it exactly is brought up, but what you're saying makes a lot of sense, Kyle. It probably more of it's probably at the bottom because it's just painful. Even on level two, I was noticing at my house when I was topping it off. I should have recorded. I didn't record it, but I remember at one point it was like the car was at like 98%, and I checked the car and I went inside and I like had dinner or whatever and walked out, looked at it, and the light was still blinking, it was still charging, and I was just like, I can't believe this. You know, it's like. It takes forever. I mean, I know that won't affect how most people own the car because getting from 95 to 100% really doesn't matter that much. And 99% of the time you're driving an electric car. But, you know, this is something that we scrutinize, you know, on Inside EVs. And you know, we like to look at the little quirks on cars compared to the other EVs. But that said, you know, it's not going to make that much of a difference unless you're using the car to go on long distances and you're charger hopping. If 99% of your driving is within 200 miles, this isn't going to really affect how much you enjoy or appreciate your Leaf. It's still a good EV. I wouldn't not recommend it, but I would recommend to anybody that's interested in buying it to understand how you're going to be using the car. Are you going to be doing long distance drives? Are you going to need to recharge that car quickly? And if you are, might not be the best EV for you.
And that car price, what's the MSRP on the one you have as tested?
So the one I have was fully loaded.
It's
46 and change.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah.
What?
For
a car that I have now, definitely goes farther. I haven't done the range test yet. Wow. They better be discounting these things at dealers. I mean, I hate to be so negative on the Leaf because it did so much early on. Mm-hmm. I just feel like Nissan made a great first effort and then it died afterwards. Similar like what BMW is doing with the i3. It's like great work 6 years ago, but let's, you know, come on, let's keep up with the times. I think that's probably a good segue to talk about some of the cars I've tested this week, and maybe the audience, whether live or later, can share what they'd like to see with the cars. Because Tom, do you still have the Leaf for another few days?
No, actually, the Leaf went back, and I just got a 2020 Bolt EV. So now, I'm like a week behind you. You seem to be getting the cars like a week. And then guess what? I get the Kona EV in a couple of weeks, which you just got. So I literally have like a week behind what you're getting.
I'll leave a little note and hide it under the passenger seat for you. We'll see if it's the same Kona. And sorry about the tires. Also, so I've had... we have a driveway full of cars. We've actually had to start like stuffing cars different places. Let's see. The Bolt came first. And then the day after the Bolt came, I got the Volvo V60 Polestar T8 plug-in hybrid, which is my favorite car on the planet, I think. And then I got the Kona electric just a few days ago, but that's going back on Monday. So I've been driving the Kona. This is the new ultimate version. Nice big screen, awesome car. Like I've done a lot of videos with Kona, and I think I did like the first long road trip in the US in one. I went halfway across the US exactly on Electrify America only like last year. And so I've spent a lot of time in the car. It's pretty much the same as previous Konas, just with a nicer UI. So I'm pleased with that. It is still ugly as hell. I mean, it is such a really ugly car to look at, but a fantastic car to drive. And I really like it. The Bolt is also here, and I've been doing some comparison tests for both. So we'll see on Inside EVs and Out of Spec, some shootout type videos between the two. They are almost identical when it comes to acceleration. It's really interesting. And the regenerative braking is actually very similar. Although here's the crazy thing about the Kona. It can do 150 kilowatt regen when you touch the brake pedal, which is just insane. That's, you know, twice the charging rate of the car.
It's triple what my Spark does.
Yeah, it's insane. Like you can pretty much get into ABS with regen only before you even use the physical brakes in some cases. It's so wild.
Do you want to give us a little heads up on what exact head-to-head tests we're going to be featuring on your YouTube channels?
Yeah, well, you can definitely expect to see which is faster in reverse. This is a very important test. And here's the crazy thing. The Bolt is the first EV we've ever tested that gives you the exact same power in reverse as it does going forwards. It's scary.
it's not limited or anything?
It is not limited on acceleration, the Bolt. You floor that thing and you are shot backwards. It's great.
I just noticed that this morning on mine, Kyle. When I was backing up in a driveway, I was like, wow, and coming off, you remember the Mini when we drove that, the Mini Cooper SE? When you're in drive and you put it in reverse, for the first second or two, it dials back the power so much.
That's right.
You almost wonder if you're in reverse. The same thing when you're in reverse and you put it in drive.
Right, it's got this big lag.
And it'll just roll forward for like 3 or 4 feet before it takes off. The Bolt is the opposite. You throw that thing into reverse and give it a little, it like throws you. It's like, I noticed that too.
Yeah, wow. Sorry to all the Kona owners that I think your car doesn't look very good. That is my personal opinion. I would still buy one over all of, you know, pretty much any EV. I aside from some of the Tesla stuff, I think the Kona is a great value. My personal opinion is it's ugly. That's not going to change. I apologize.
Yeah, we're sorry that you're wrong about that, Kyle. But it's okay.
There you go.
Yeah, actually, I like the Kona better than the Niro EV, which is on the same platform and slightly larger, but from Kia instead of Hyundai, yeah.
Yeah, but there's supposedly, and I've never really fully researched it, Tom, you might know, there's some different, so same size battery pack, pretty much same charging curve, but a different supplier of cells, Kona to Niro. Is that the case?
Yeah, I know there was early on. I'm not sure if they've changed that. I think it was really mostly because they couldn't source enough from one supplier. And they, both of the cars kind of launched at the same time. I don't know if that was going to be their long-term strategy, though. So, you know, I'm not sure right now if that's still the case, but I know when it launched, that was the case.
As far as I know, it was going to be ongoing, and I'm going to get this the wrong way around, but I think it's the Kona, because the Kona came first. I think that came with the LG Chem cells, and then the, of course,
SK because innovation?
Then the SK cells went into, I think, the e-Niro. But because the battery, because the pack sizes are the same, it's right. And this isn't, you know, this isn't lazy journalism from, you know, the sort of the non-EV, because I think it's, you know, it's, you know, I understand why some, you read articles, people say, oh, it's got exactly the same battery pack because it has the same sizes, and people draw that straight line between. But as far as I know, it's still the case. They're still using, based on supply contracts, which were done years ago, still using different suppliers and slightly different chemistries, I believe. But as Tom says, it's hard to get a definitive answer, even from trying to search through the Korean press and the websites as well, and trying to do some Google Translate on that. But as far as I know, still, they've got different chemistries in those cars, giving slightly different performance and range. Kona slightly better for performance, e-Niro slightly better for range, and of course a new battery facility opening here in Europe, which means that that opens up a whole new supply chain for getting the Konas out to the European market as well, which is great. We've seen those waiting times go down from 12 months to a few weeks, miraculously.
Yeah, it was crazy how in certain parts of the world people were really dying to get their hands on these cars, and totally understandably. I mean, I think it is worth every penny. You know, in California, there was like they're charging $6,000-$7,000 over MSRP for these cars. Meanwhile, on the East Coast, you can get them for $6,000 under MSRP. And my dad actually bought two of them under sticker with a discount, got the full tax credit, and sold two of them basically for sticker. And I mean, he got the base one. He was planning on keeping it, and then he wanted the ultimate with all the options. But it was just crazy. I mean, people in California should just go, I guess, out of state and ship it over. But I don't know if they lose out on some in-state credits doing that. Yeah. The last thing I'll point out, having the Kona and the Bolt at the same time, is the technology on the Kona is really good. Lane keep assist, adaptive cruise control, something the Bolt still doesn't have, which is just crazy to me. But the Bolt, I think, is a better handler, more predictable handler. So it's very similar range, very similar acceleration, similar size. It's pretty amazing to see how matched up the two are. And I think the cars are only like $1,000 or something in between them. They're pretty much the same price as tested.
So I just want to take this moment just to mention that the Inside EVs forum has a very active Kona community. So if you're a Kona electric owner, you know, head over there and check that out. Let us know about your user experience, and maybe you can find out some other information about your car from the other users. Some of them have been reporting some problems here and there. There's like a noise, and some people have been having their gearboxes replaced or sometimes their motors. It's kind of up in the air. We need to kind of get a hold of Hyundai and talk about that too. Talk about that with them. Actually, I think the Niro EVs can also have that same situation. But
is the noise a high-pitched noise or more of a grumbly, grinding noise?
You know, there's all different kinds of noises that people mention.
Because I've noticed it's hard in every Kona I've driven, a really, like, you have the pedestrian warning sound, that aside, there's a separate electrical, very high-pitch. You know,
I think that's
like
an inverter thing that should be filtered out.
Oil whine or something.
It sounds to me like an inverter whine that they haven't filtered out. That usually they have. I mean, you know, usually that's, you know, they're they're pretty good cars for what they are. You know, they're not developed from the ground up to be EVs. So I think we'll see, you know, a little bit better execution from them in the future. But I mean, they're not too bad. I'm going to be curious to see what you get for your 70 mile an hour range test, because some of our runners, they get over 300, 320, 350 miles on a charge sometime.
Yeah, my dad could regularly get the gasometer over 300 miles driving around town, mild highway driving, no problem.
Right. I see one of our commenters is mentioning that the Nissan needs to replace the Leaf, just to circle back to that car. And that's true. They have the Ariya coming out hopefully next year, or whatever they plan. They called it the Ariya concept, so they might keep that name in production. I kind of hope so, because I like that. It's the name of my niece. It's spelled differently, but and that's going to be a liquid cooled crossover all wheel drive with you know, lots of power, and it's a good looking vehicle as well. So let's move on to some news. So the big news we have, like this week, we had a special feature that we got in touch with a white hat hacker who goes by Green the Only on the Twitter, and he was talking about some data leaks. Now this is a different situation than most data leaks you hear about. There was like no hacking into the computer at Tesla headquarters or anything like that. Instead, these leaks are coming from computers taken out of cars when they're being updated to the latest hardware. So that's like HW3, we call it, for the Tesla Model 3 and Model Y, and then the MCU version 2 on the Model S and Model X. So these components, when they're taken out of the vehicles, they're ending up on eBay, and some people either from dumpster diving or otherwise getting a hold of discarded electronics. Or getting hold of them, or they could be coming like also from Tesla technicians, which would be disappointing for Tesla for sure. So sometimes they're physically damaged because they're supposed to, you know, kind of destroy them so that people can't extract data for them or make them any use of them after they're taken out of the cars. But still, in the case of our friend Green the Only, he was able to take data out of the one that he bought that was damaged. And so we actually got in contact with, he bought four different units on eBay, and we actually got in contact with all four of these people using the data that was extracted. You know, so we got their, some of the data that could be taken off of them include like the owner's home and work locations, saved Wi-Fi passwords, calendar entries from the phone, call list, address books from paired phones, Netflix and other stored session cookies. And like if you have your Netflix cookies there, hackers can take control of those accounts and maybe, you know, spread your credentials online. So, you know, I'm not sure how likely these things are to happen or how concerned. I think people have different levels of concern about this sort of data leak, but you know, it's never good to have your stuff out there. Have you read about this, Martin?
Yeah, and so this is firstly a fantastic piece of journalism, and congratulations to all the team involved in doing this. I know it's a big team effort at Inside EVs, because you just can't go accusing someone like Tesla of leaking personal customer data and making sure that you got your story straight. So congratulations firstly to the team. I know they went through many different things to make sure that it was all correct, and of course we're very confident in the story as well. And I was amazed when this article dropped, and almost a week ago now, it was just amazing to see. In one way, not surprising, because the way that Tesla operates at breakneck speed, the fact that this maybe hasn't been thought of, or if it has been thought of, it doesn't get addressed as the way it should. You know, that whole kind of West Coast Silicon Valley thing of moving quickly and breaking things, that I understand how it happens. But of course, from a perspective here in Europe, where we have GDPR, privacy regulations as well, you know, everything that we do, every workplace that that I've been in recently, there's seminars, there's training, there's going on, you know, there's big fines in place for any company that misplaces personal data and people's rights over their own personal data to have that deleted if they want to. and the right to be forgotten. That's all tied up in this. So I was amazed to read this story. I was really intrigued to see that personal data has been finding its way onto eBay. And of course, you know, it's not ideal for those people who then got contacted by Green the Only and Inside EVs and those people that were contacted to say, hey, look, we have bought some things off eBay. We've found your name on them, and we're going to delete that data ourselves. But we wanted to let you know first. So again, fair play that we contacted those people, and then all of their personal data was destroyed. So I don't make excuses for Tesla because this is really bad. I also, thinking of the way through the company runs, I kind of understand it, but again, I don't want to excuse them for it. So I'm sitting on the fence a little bit. Sorry about that.
And we did one of the computer owners. Tesla said that they would contact them and let them know about, you know, when we contacted them, they hadn't heard from them, and so they were a little bit worried. They still mentioned they were actually big fans of the company and still supportive of what they're doing, and they love their car, which is great. They're just a little, you know, disappointed with this particular instance. So Tom, are you aware of the situation as well?
So yeah, no need to go over everything Martin said. I think he explained the situation pretty eloquently. The only thing that I'll add to it is that, you know, measures have to be put in place that end this, you know, where this type of problem isn't persistent, whereas more and more Teslas, you know, are put on the road and parts are recycled and reused and sold over. There has to be some sort of a protocol put in place where they're confident that the important personal data gets wiped. So that's a little bit above my pay grade, how they figure out doing that. But they have to figure it out because that's pretty important stuff. And, you know, it's not going to look good if this goes on and on. And, you know, 8 months from now, there's another story about it. It continues to give Tesla a black eye. Just figure it out and deal with it. And I'm sure they will.
Yeah, like you mentioned, I think people mentioned in the comments of that story too. They could be, you know, and Martin mentioned they could be not eligible, but they could get fined anyway in Europe for this kind of data leak. And we should also mention too that this is not a unique thing for Tesla. I mean, other automakers have similar situations, but with a Tesla, there's so much more information that you put in your car. You know, most cars you can't watch Netflix, you know, in your car. But yeah, that's just one of the special whatever situation there with that company. You have thoughts about this at all, Kyle?
Yeah, look, I don't want someone messing up my progress on my Netflix movies, all right? I think that would really, really annoy me. And, you know, I certainly am a little bit lax when it comes to data, but my good friend Ben obviously went to school for computing network systems and sort of explained the severity of what can happen if your data gets into the wrong hands. And it's pretty scary. I mean, things that people can do with just a few little bits of info. So I definitely think this is a problem, and hopefully it gets solved. It's my guess is what's happening is service center employees are dumpster diving, like we had mentioned. But there is a break in the system somewhere. I'm not saying Tesla needs to take all of these systems out and destroy them with fire or whatever, but I think there needs to be a really good process of they all go to one location and they are somewhat looked after.
Yeah, as I was reading the story, as I was going through it, I started to think to myself, I know what's happened here. People have either been given the old units or they've bought the old units for testing or just because I think you can pay $1,000 and they'll give you the old unit, and then they've put it on eBay because they're finished with it and it's nothing to do with Tesla. And then I get to the bottom of the article and it says, oh, Inside EVs contacted all of the people and they were all like, whoa, hang on a minute, what? So that wasn't the case. I was really hopeful as I was reading through it, thinking, like, oh, there's a logical explanation for all of this. But no, none of them had done that. It wasn't self-inflicted wounds by those people. So they had no prior knowledge of this. They'd just given the old unit back and presumed it was being disposed of. So pretty disappointing. But you know, as the article says, you know, they've Tesla have been made aware of the situation. We await comments. It's pretty normal for them. Their MO is not to engage with anything that they don't want to engage with, and so they don't play by some kind of typical established rules. So, you know, we can ask the question, but I don't think we're not going to get an answer on this. I think it'll just be ignored, and hope that hopefully it'll go away for them.
Yeah, I don't expect to hear back from them. Their PR department's been pretty quiet in the last like 5 months or so. But yeah, we saw some. I mean, they're listed on eBay still. I did a little search yesterday, and they're like $500 and some you can buy Model 3 computer, and you know, I guess you could take some data off that. I'm not really sure why people.
Well, I think a lot of MCU ones are failing. We're sort of getting to the end of use life for a lot of the original components in early cars. There's eMMC chips that get too many read and write cycles basically brick. You know, there's people that are restoring these cars that are either crashed or stolen or something, and they want to either replace the data on them. You know, there's a lot of, in the U.S., a lot of vehicles are stolen, especially on the East Coast, and shipped overseas somewhere. And those cars may need to have computers swapped or whatever. So there's always going to be a market for secondhand components. And it basically comes down to who's doing the dirty work to get it out of the service center and into the free market. That's the big leak here. Is it service center employees that are going behind Tesla, or are they just putting them outside in the dumpster with, you know, people just lurking around trying to get them out? That's the leak. Once that gets solved, the whole problem goes away pretty much.
Yeah. Just your point about cars being stolen, shipped overseas. In Tesla's case, they've been very, very lucky. I've read like one report of a car actually, you know, getting on a ship and making it to the Middle East, I believe it was, but they then tracked it down and got it back. So you can steal the Tesla, but don't plan on keeping it for very long, because they can track you down. Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. I was actually with the lead investigator for NYPD's like stolen car area or whatever. I was at a party like last year, and we spent the whole time talking about this problem. And he said that there was not super on the topic, but I think everyone will find it interesting. There was a huge problem where you would have people come with like fake licenses or whatever, rent Mercedes GL450s from like one company. And the guy at the counter doesn't care. They just want to get cars out. They literally stack containers full of these things, ship them out. The car company Enterprise, I'm throwing that name out there. I don't know if it was them or not. They're like, we don't care. We get insurance for each car, so we're just writing it off, getting full price back. And, you know, the cars are gone and no one cares. And he's like, this is a huge, big problem. And it was really interesting to see how they were looking in containers, tracking and shipping. And a service like a connected vehicle now changes the game. Once that car hooks up to the internet, probably on Wi-Fi, to another country, because the cell connections are different over there. You know, AT&T isn't going to work in wherever they're going to. And, you know, that's like a huge ping. Let's go figure out. It's not necessarily at that point trying to get the car back. It's trying to stop this flow of vehicles.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting situation. Okay, well, let's move on a little bit. Now, we had a question or a comment in the chat, or I'm not sure. Squad Arena asks about the Tesla new battery patent design. I'm not sure what he's getting to, but we did have a story yesterday, I believe. There's a company called Hanwha. Tesla is buying some battery manufacturing equipment, and it looks like they have a new chemistry coming up. We refer to it as the million mile chemistry. We'll hear about it more coming up later this month when Tesla has their big battery day. And it sounds like, and Tesla also had some job listings about new battery engineers, and it sounds like they're setting up a line at the Fremont factory, not the Gigafactory, but the Fremont factory, possibly for this new chemistry. Maybe they're going to put a make a test line or something, and which they can maybe, I don't know, get the process down and then ship that line or that schematic and recreate it at different gigafactories. So that's just something to keep an eye out for. This EV, the battery day, is going to be pretty exciting, I think. So back to our scheduled program. We just want to hit on Sandy Monroe. That's the teardown specialist, and he's had a Tesla Model Y, and he's been doing a series of videos on his Monroe Live YouTube channel. And he's got a second Y now. He's taken the first red one and he's torn that down completely. And we've seen there's still some videos coming out more, but he added one with the battery yesterday. He had the Model Y battery out and the Model 3 battery and doing comparisons with them. But he's got a hold of another blue Model Y. And he had a chance to take that out for some test driving yesterday. The video was pretty great. But he did notice the cowl underneath, and you can see him here in the video online. He lifts it up, and there's some clips. This is like a very small issue. It's not a really big deal, but it is kind of annoying. And hopefully, when the Fremont factory gets production up again, they can address this, and hopefully they'll have a fix for it. We had an email from somebody, a Model 3 owner, who had similar problems. I'm not sure if it's the exact same design, but yeah, you can see them here. These clips are breaking easily, and there's some possible rattles going on. It's just a small annoying issue. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, it's frustrating for Tesla that if this is an isolated issue, that two of them go to the one person who is broadcasting it to millions of people on the internet, and that both cars had this problem. I've not seen a load of people posting YouTube videos saying that this one particular cowl is a massive issue for the Model Y, but you can't deny the fact that he's bought two of the cars now. This one he's not going to rip apart, by the way. He's using this for testing, if we didn't say that. But he immediately, what I love about him as well is he gets a bee in his bonnet. So like the first thing he wants to do is have a look at this, because you can see when the first one, when in the original video, it's so funny, he gets so annoyed, in the original video where the cowl was broken, it's either a bad design or it was in transit or something, but he just gets so frustrated because he wants things to be designed well and be designed properly, and then when he gets this one and he lifts up the bonnet and it's the same, you can just see he's so frustrated. So it would be very unfortunate if this was simply two isolated incidents going to the same person. And it's one of those things that, you know, will be fixed. You know, Tesla do improve things on the fly, constantly getting better. They will, I'm sure somebody would have watched that video already a long time ago when it first went online, and they'll have been into their design software and had a look at what can be improved. And as you say, the factory just hasn't been open to make cars, but I've no doubt that'll be, if there is a design flaw, it will be fixed. But I'd love to hear from anyone, either in the comments now or in the comments down below of this video, if they've had a similar issue. That'd be really interesting.
We've actually been, and we had a story about this yesterday. We must have put out a call for or something in our earlier posts about it, but we've had a number of owners sending us emails. Yes, they have the same issue. I don't even know how many there were, but there were a number. I see them pop up, and somebody else, you know. Like I said, it's a small thing, but it's just a little bit annoying. But yeah, so we don't really want to spend a lot of time on that, because so Sandy, he went on Sean Mitchell's YouTube channel and had an interview about the whole thing. And I believe he mentions this in his little drive video as well, that he actually recommends the Model Y. Like, this is something he says he's never done with an electric vehicle before, the Leaf or the Bolt or the Model 3, you know, which had a lot more issues than he's found in the Model Y. And he's actually recommended the Model Y to friends or people he's met. That was kind of interesting. You have thoughts about this, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't love Sandy? The guy's like a rock star now. I mean, you know, to Martin's point, what I think part of what makes him so endearing is that he's genuine, and you can see his frustration when he comes across something in the car that wasn't done properly or to his opinion properly, and also his excitement when he sees Tesla did something that was innovative or an improvement over their previous vehicles. You know, he'll point to something and say, ah, you see how they did this? I dinged them on the Model 3 because they had it done this way. And look, they were listening to me and they changed it. And now this is good. I like this. This is good. So he really gets excited when he sees something that's an improvement. And, you know, he's selling mugs now and shirts and everything. And good for him. It's incredibly entertaining what he's been doing. And it's informative. It really, you know, when else could the average person really see a car being disassembled piece by piece and then have the person doing it really explain what this part is for and why we do this and why this is foam and why this is glue and why this needs a rivet and why a certain type of weld is used here, but a different type of weld is used here. You know, I think these, it's a great public service. You know, it's great that it's also great that he sees the improvement on the Y from the 3, that Tesla is step-by-step getting better. This the thing with the cowl to me is a non-issue. All new cars, even from the established OEMs, when they first come out, there's little things that they realize they didn't button up 100% and they make changes and corrections. This is just a cowl cover. You know, it's not like something that's going to really affect the car or be a major warranty problem. So to me, that was a non-issue. And to hear Sandy recommend the Y now really, you know, puts a bow on the initial teardown and say, you know, this guy knows what he's talking about. He's you know, literally taking this thing apart screw by screw. And he likes it enough that he would recommend it to friends. So good on for Tesla. They're getting better as their cars progress, which is what you want to see. And I think that having a neutral third party like Sandy validate that is 100 times better than, you know, even having the customers say, oh, I love my car, because, you know, Tesla customers in general all love their cars. Even when their cars have a problem, they still love them. But having that neutral third party validation from Sandy Monroe, I think is really important, and it bodes well for the company.
I think it just cements the Model Y as being the best electric car all around when you factor price, functionality, charging infrastructure. If we had a CCS adapter in the US, this would be a game changer. You could just go anywhere and not even think about it. We're pretty much there now. I just think for cost and value, like what else would you consider? Obviously the Kona, I'm really enjoying it. The Bolt, great car, but for just a smidge more, the Model Y is so much more car.
And that's, you know, that is the thing over here as well. When people say to me, and I, by the way, I'm a signed up Renault Zoe fan. I'm onto my second one now and we love it. But if someone says to me, look, I'm thinking of buying an electric car, what should I look at? You know, you have to put a Tesla really high on the list, because here in Europe, we've got the CCS Combo 2 connector on all the on Model Y, well, no Model Y, but on Model 3 and soon Model Y as well. You get adapters as well. And if you get a Chademo, you've got obviously the adapters that we've always had as well. It's the ultimate combo of charging. And there's Tesla supercharging stations, which, it's always funny, I guess, around Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays, I'll go on Inside EVs and I'll look at the news from thousands of miles away and I'll see queues at Tesla charging stations. I have never seen a queue at a Tesla supercharging station in the UK ever on the busiest day. So that there's free stalls, you can use any charging network, the cars are always updated. I do have to, not reluctantly, but I do have to say to people, look, you've got to put these cars very high at the top of the list. When will we get Model Y? Well, they'll be made in the Berlin Gigafactory, and that won't be until 2021. But I think if you put, you know, a year on it and said, well, you know, what's it going to be on? It's going to be the 8th of May, 2021. And if there were Model Ys being delivered from Berlin or Gigafactory Berlin or whatever it's called these days, that would be a pretty good result. So we're not going to see any right-hand drive versions coming out of Fremont anytime soon.
Have a back and forth with the EPA and Elon Musk talking about the range of the Model S. I believe he mentioned this on the Q1 call with analysts, that the Model S actually can already get 400 miles, but there was some mistake made during the testing that a door was left open and the battery lost like 2% or something. But then the EPA came back and said, no, that didn't happen. And then, as is wont, Elon Musk again came back and said, we have the logs that said it did, but yeah. Did you see this, Tom?
It's kind of much ado about nothing. I really haven't paid much attention to that. 391, 400. I know 400 looks a lot better, but is it a big deal? You know, I guess it is to Tesla because they want to say they're the first company to have an EPA rated 400 mile range car. Lucid is saying that when they get EPA tested at the end of this year, the car is going to be more than 400 miles. So I guess it's important that Tesla be the first company to get to it, because I think they assume that once the Lucid Air does get tested, it's going to have 400 mile EPA range rating. So Tesla, you know, they just want another feather in their cap, the first car to be rated at that. And it looks like they're going to petition or have the EPA tested again at some point. I don't know. It's, you know, he said, she said, 391, 400. I'm not going to lose sleep over that. I think it's really much ado over nothing. The car is a fantastic range. And as I mentioned earlier, when I talked about our Leaf drive, you know, the fact that the number says 300 miles, 400 miles on the window sticker doesn't mean the average person's going to hop in it and get 400 miles of range. It depends on the temperature, how fast they're driving, where they're going. Teslas aren't recommended to charge to 100% anyway. And that the EPA range rating test is when you test it to 100%. So the average person is never going to see 400 miles of range on the new Model S anyway, in normal circumstances, maybe on the once a month or once every 3 months when they're going really far and they charge it to 100%, which I wouldn't, even if I had a new Model S, I wouldn't charge it to 100%. I would just stop at a supercharger, you know, 50 miles earlier, every 300 or 320 miles and recharge the car. So I think it's much ado over nothing. What do you guys think?
Is it not a more of an issue about the official body that is in charge of doing official testing not understanding the car? If this were true, that they left the key in the car overnight and therefore the car sits in this kind of half off state, I think it's called waiting. I'm not a Tesla owner, but like a waiting for driver mode or something. Mm-hmm. It used about 2% of the battery in the overnight state. If they don't understand how to test the cars, how can we have confidence in the official bodies that we rely on to give us the numbers? If this is true, they've denied it. Elon said, well, hang on, we have the data. The sensors even show the door was left open overnight. So key in the car, door left open, 2% battery used. It would have hit 400. You're right. It's not about 9 miles. It's about, well, can we trust them to do their job right?
You're talking about the U.S. government here. So.
Okay, sorry. I'm a few thousand miles away. So sorry.
Every government has their issues. Yeah, but that's a great point, Martin. Yeah, it does speak to more about the EPA really than whether you get whatever it is, 382 or 400 miles or whatever the number is.
One sec, Dominic. I just want to add so the viewers understand how it works here. The way it works with the EPA is the manufacturer always does their own EPA range rating test, and they certify a certain amount of miles. We're guessing here that Tesla certified the car at 400 miles, and then they provide that report to the EPA. Then the EPA selects certain cars that they're going to retest. They only do, I think, 10 to 15% of the cars. The EPA does not test every car. Typically, they just take what the manufacturer provides and says, okay, we'll take your word for it. It's 400 miles. And they certify that as they go over the report and they make sure it's correct, because they don't have the ability to test every single car. So they kind of just cherry pick cars. And that was one of the issues with the Porsche Taycan. If you remember, Porsche kind of disputed what the EPA came up with. It was because the Taycan was one of the cars that the EPA selected to certify. They must have done that with the Model S also now, because that's why there's that dispute. So just to make sure the people here listening understand, that's how the EPA does it. Most electric cars never get tested by the EPA. The manufacturer does the testing and provides the report to the EPA.
And here's the thing that I'd like to dive into. We've talked about this on the previous show. Tycon 4S reviewers, we talked about this, consistently 290 plus miles of range on the highway. Model S, you drive it on the highway, you're way below EPA range. So what's going on here? Why are some cars seem to be, you know, you would think, you know, not every car is going to perform the same at speed, but you would think if the car is rated at this test, if you drive faster consistently, it would do worse. Why do some cars do worse and some do better? That is just, I cannot figure out why that's the case.
I think we need a better EPA test really for electric vehicles. Right now, it's, I think they use the same test that they use for gas vehicles, and they do some calculations and voila, this is your MPGe, and they extract range from that.
Yeah, because a highway straight isn't going to work, because that will, you know, show significantly under what you'll get around town. I would like to develop our own at Inside EVs, which is like, let's try to get the conditions as best as possible. We'll do X number of laps of the track at slow speed. We'll do X number of miles at highway under these, you know, best conditions we can get, and do our best to rate all the cars, because we pretty much can get access to every new EV. So we should be able to do our own Inside EVs. So we'll have IEV, WLTP, EPA, NEDC, all the different ones.
And I've got to say, guys, by the way, I know that we're coming full circle here on the cars that you've been testing this week, but 2 weeks ago, Kyle and Tom, you had to push the Mini, the last 3 feet to the charger. I loved it. I love seeing a car run out of electricity as long as I'm not the one in the driver's seat. And Tom, you did your Leaf E Plus with 1% left. So I'm disappointed that you weren't pushing that around a car park somewhere, pushing it up to a charging slot.
I did try to. I got off the highway at 1%, and I circled the charging station a few times, and it wouldn't budge from the 1%. I was trying to get it to read zero so I could take a picture. But after I did a couple of laps, I said, you know what? This kind of isn't fair to the range test, because it was a 70-mile-an-hour range test, and now I'm going 40 miles an hour. So if I throw on another 3 or 4 miles, it's not fair. So I decided to plug in at 1%, and I was alone. I wasn't with Kyle and his friend to push the car if we needed to. So, I wasn't about pushing the Leaf that last 4 feet.
So when people can see on the video the Mini reversing at 3 miles an hour, Kyle, your foot was
welded out, to the floor, right? Just completely planted. Yeah, I mean, you know, once pack voltage gets so low, when you consistently pull, you know, more current out of it, you'll have a voltage sag. And I was worried about bricking the pack, so I was driving quite gingerly the last few miles. And we did get like an extra 2 or 3 miles. It wouldn't have made a big difference. Plus, no one even really, you know, your mileage may vary based on your driving conditions. But the Mini was good. One of the reasons we drained it all the way down is we were doing a capacity test as well as a range test. I think Tom had the right idea with the Leaf. You kind of get it down low. And then another thing with the Leaf I wanted to ask you, Tom, was I have noticed in the Leafs that I've spent time with, none being the Plus, that the BMS gets really confused as to where it is. So that's why I think you had maybe problems charging to 100% on your DC charger originally, and you had to move to level 2. I've seen, like, I've gotten in my friend's Leaf, same one, and it's like 94%, 98, 96. Where am I? It has no idea. And I mean, that's a lot of just use case. All EVs will have this problem, because BMS is always kind of just guessing what's in the pack. But did you notice this with your Leaf? Is it E Plus, I guess?
Yeah, it was the Leaf SL Plus. I think they call it the E Plus in Europe, but in the US, it's just the Leaf Plus, and then it's either S, SL, or SV. Yeah, one of the things that I noticed was when I got the car up to 98% charge, like I said, the DC fast charger wouldn't charge it anymore at 98%. And I spoke to a friend of mine who works at BTC Power. He was able to pull the charging logs. And at that point, the car was accepting less than 3 amps. And the message that the charging station got from the car was that it was fully charged, but it wasn't. So I moved it over to the level 2. I needed to start at 100%. And then it charged for 52 more minutes. But the state of charge in the car still read 98%. It wasn't going to 100%. And then it shut off on level two and it still read 98%. But then I turned the car on and off a couple times and it flipped from 98%. It jumped to 100%. So yeah, I think that's what you're explaining. That the BMS was a little confused.
Yeah, you were at 100% the whole time. It was just the BMS was, you know, just not calibrated. So you know, for it to pull 3 amps at pack voltage, which is like a 400 volt pack, right?
Yeah.
That's like nothing.
Yeah. But I wanted to leave it 100%. I had
once it kills charging, I
sat there for an hour and a half while it was drawing like 2 amps, you know.
Yeah, and so you were at 100% the whole time. So you're sorry that you wasted a couple hours, but no, I think this is a big problem for EVs and specifically for Tesla owners, because Tesla, Tom and I, you and I go back and forth on this. They read rated range calculations. So let's say you charged at, I don't know, 80% every day and your 80% is 240 miles, just throwing numbers out there. Some days it might show that your 80% is 234 miles, and some days it might show that it's 250 miles, but it's not, I mean, you still have the same energy in the pack, more or less. It's just the BMS is confused. So the way you solve this, I have a lot of people, I mean, I get at least 5 messages, 6 messages a day about this specific question. How do you recalibrate your battery management system? And it is something that will self-learn over time. It will phase from being accurate to inaccurate and eventually go back. There's really no way to tell, but if you are taking a big road trip or you have just taken a big road trip and you plan to run the car down to low states of charge often, I would let the car sit at like 5 or 10% state of charge for at least, I don't know, 5 hours, let's just say. And then you charge it all the way up to 100% and let it sit overnight. And you do this a few times, 2 or 3 times, not great for battery health, but it retrains the BMS. Another thing you can do regularly, I do this with all of our EVs, is you can delay the charging to start after a drive for like an hour or two. I usually start my charging at like 1 or 2 in the morning, does a couple things, battery's warm by the time I get to the car, and it's also had time to sit at the lower state of charge. I mean, as long as the car is not dead, if we're above 20%, I do this. And it lets the car see low pack voltage and then very high pack voltage. And it will, that over time will help keep your BMS in line. But for the drivers who drive from home to the store, come back, plug in every single time, that's when these cars get confused.
That's what's going on with my Spark. It's not too bad, but it's showing fewer miles than it, I think it really should. And it's not that old. It's got like maybe 13,000 miles on it now. And I'm missing like 10 miles or something. And it's like, it's just disappointing. And I don't think it's really missing that many miles, but because it's only got 83 miles to start with.
Is the Spark rated range or is it guess-a-meter as well? Because it could be down to driving style. Guess-a-meter is harder to see if your BMS is calibrated or not, because it's also doing a predicted driving calculation with the mileage.
I think it's doing some prediction. I don't really take it super easy with it either. It's so much fun to drive.
They're great.
It's so much fun to drive. It's hard to kind of relax all the time. But anyway, but that's great information about that. I'll try that out. But we're getting running down the clock, so I want to move over to another story real quick, because the Audi Q4 e-tron is apparently coming in 2021, and according to Car and Driver, at least, it's going to have a price tag of around $45,000, and this is going to be based on the Volkswagen. It's on the Volkswagen MEB platform, and
that's right.
Similar to the i4, I believe. Is it ID4? Sorry.
All of the ID family are going to be on the MEB platform. Apart from maybe going down to ID1, not that it exists yet, but if there is a super small car, then they'll shorten the platform, which isn't ideal, but it can be done. That was in the news this week as well, and VW looking at replacing all those cars that are out there at the minute, like the VW kind of E-Up and the Seat Me and the Citigo IV, and having an MEB platform shortened for an ID1. But yeah, apart from that, it's the same platform, and it can take up to something like 120 kilowatt hour battery packs for the very biggest versions of those cars. I find this story exciting, unbelievable. Also an Audi, like a nice luxury Audi that'll be up against those saloon sedans, those crossover SUVs, all in this price point of mid 40,000. I find it unbelievable, frankly, that $45,000 for a I mean, I'm sure you can option this thing like crazy, but for an all-electric Audi Q4 e-tron, that just seems so cheap. But maybe I'm comparing it to the e-tron and the Sportback as well, which are in $70,000-$90,000. So maybe that's what I'm comparing it to. But it just, I saw that headline price and I couldn't believe it, couldn't get my head around it. But if they are going up against ID3, ID4, ID5, that's the kind of price they're going to be.
I mean, buyers of this car, I mean, they look at the Tesla Model Y, I guess, going to be one of the competitors, but they'll also look at other Audi products. Like, would you buy the regular e-tron at $75,000 or $77,000 for the Sportback instead of, you know, $45,000 for, I mean, it's a good-looking car. I think it's going to have a lot more range than the e-tron that's out now. Are there any advantages to having the regular e-tron over this?
Massaging seats. There you go. $40,000 worth of massaging seats.
Does it have the massaging seats, the regular e-tron?
Yeah, well, you got to get the nice one. You got to get, we have like two levels. One's prestige, one's something plus, I forget. But yeah, that is worth it in an e-tron. But the thing with the e-tron is you'll be buying them certified pre-owned when they're $45,000. So it'll be a new one of these or a used e-tron. And that's when it becomes a little bit of a close comparison. I think it's definitely going to be a case where this will cannibalize the sales of the e-tron, the full-blown one. At least here in the U.S. and Europe, you guys get the 50 and the 55 and a few different versions. But, to Martin's point, the price on this car is unbelievable because in the U.S. we'll get that $45,000, then a $7,500 tax credit, and in certain states, an extra credit on top of that, like Colorado's $5,000 off. New Jersey, this will have enough range to get another, I think, $5,000, right, Tom? It's $25 for every mile of EPA rated range you get. Mm-hmm. Connecticut has an extra $2,000. Like, this is a great value. And I hope they lease them because they'll be like $300 a month for one of these.
Yeah. I kind of look at it if the story is true, kind of like how the Model 3 came in and really cannibalized Model S sales. How it was such a vehicle that was almost as good as Model S at half the price. That's kind of what this looks like to me. And not that the regular e-tron really is selling like the Model S was at the time, but it's going to be as tough a sell as the e-tron is now. And I like the e-tron. I've driven them. I think they're really good cars. They're just priced a little bit out of where they should be. It's going to be very difficult to make a sale. I wouldn't want to be a salesman trying to sell the e-tron with this sitting next to it at $30,000 less. But we don't know for sure that that's where the pricing, that's a report. I don't think it's coming from Audi. And as Martin said, you know, that's, if anything, that's going to be a starting price. We don't know how well equipped it is. You might need $10,000 worth of options just to make it like a functional car. Let's wait till we see the real pricing on it. But I'm excited by it. To get an all electric Audi for $50,000 before incentives, I think it's great. And this is going against the Y, maybe even the Mustang Mach-E. It's kind of from across competition. Great. Join the party. More in that $40,000 to $50,000 range, the better.
That's a good looking car as well. That's the right size, the right shape. That's going to suit many markets.
And they're a worldwide car because e-tron's available. I just saw someone in Pakistan got an e-tron new from the factory. There was the first one, and it's the only new electric vehicle for sale in certain countries, like just kind of these random markets that Audi's been established in for so long. So here's Bill. He said he got a prestige e-tron for $65,000 that was probably certified or demo. These things are just going to come down in price like rocks. So nice. It's just the case with any nice SUV that's premium. They all tank. And I know we want to end the show, Dominic, I'm sure, but one last point I'd like to bring up. If you have Tesla referral wheels that you've won, Tesla will not reach out to you to schedule them. Just schedule a service appointment in the app and then you can get them installed. That's how I did it. I just got mine put on this week. They're really cool. They look great. And hopefully you enjoy them.
And they're very thirsty. We have an article with your video. I'm not sure if that's an out-of-spec motoring video.
Yeah, that was for out of spec.
Okay, yeah. But you did like a range test with the referral wheels, and they are, as you say, thirsty, but they look great.
Yeah, pretty much like you're going to be well over 300 watt hour per mile driving normally in this. And, you know, that's just not great, but they look great. They're not any lighter. They're not any better for the track. That's the crazy thing. This Tesla track pack thing is nonsense to me, because here, spend $5,500 for wheels that get you nothing, really good tires, and then like, okay, brake pads and fluid, and you could just do that for a few hundred bucks on your own. So I don't really see how any enthusiast could purchase the track pack, but with a referral setup like this, they were free, so why not? But Yeah, that's my take on it.
Right. Okay. So just really quickly before we end the show, I just want to also mention that NIO tripled its car sales. Oh, actually, circle back actually to the e-tron. I just want to also mention that it was like it's been the top seller in Norway for like, I think, all year 2020, and it's still up. You know, it's outselling everything by not a little bit. So at least in some places where they know EVs in Norway, it's like a very EV friendly country. So it's doing good there. So that's kind of nice to see. So quickly, yeah, NIO tripled its electric car sales in April of 2020, and they just won a Best of the Best design award for the ES6. Tom, you have a word about that?
Yeah, so really good news for NIO out of China. You know, more good news to come, I believe. So NIO sold 3,155 cars in March, which was a 181% improvement year over year for March. So great news for NIO. The ES6, which won the design award, led the sales, about 90% of their sales. That's their mid-size crossover. The ES6, they sold 2,907 of those. Now, the larger vehicle, the ES8, that's a full-size SUV, they only sold 248 of those, but they're introducing a brand new ES8 this month. So it's understandable that people weren't rushing out to buy the old model, because the new ES8 is just beginning to be available. So, you know, over 3,000 cars sold in March. Great news for NIO. They have a new, second generation redone ES8 coming out now. And then they have their EC6, which is a full-size crossover, about the size of a Model Y. And that's coming out in a couple of months. So while NIO had been struggling for the last few months or so, they seem to be getting some footing, their ground underneath them. This is a great report for March, for April, I'm sorry. Look forward to what they do next month with the new ES8 launching, and then in the summer with the EC6. I think NIO, there's the EC6 we have up there. I was at the launch on NIO Day in December. I think better days are ahead for NIO, and that's good, because more competition, the better.
Do you think NIO passes people by because they're just not in the front of mind?
Well, they're in China, so...
Outside of China, I mean, do you think that people are just not aware of the good things they're doing? Just it doesn't get reported enough?
Yeah, because we don't see the cars. I mean, at least in the U.S., I think I got to see one. And Tom, you've been over there in San Jose. They have like the only NIOs in the U.S. are there. They have no plans to even launch, is my understanding here. So, which is a huge market. We have a lot of EV people here. It just doesn't matter. We can't drive the cars. I think they're doing awesome work. I really think they're cool. Their little Nomi talking cat thing's pretty interesting. I mean, I think they really are focusing on a holistic approach to driving a car. I'm a big fan.
I think they had to scale back their international ambitions, but it's going to take them a while to get back to where they had originally intended to be. But I see them improve like this, like with the ES8, they've realized that it's not really selling like it should, and maybe because it needs to be this better or this better, and they've made a bunch of improvements.
I drove the ES6 back in December for you know, a couple hundred miles. And I tell you, I was really impressed with it. The NIO Pilot worked great on the highway. It's very similar to you know, how Autopilot works with Tesla. All the safety functions worked great. The car was comfortable. It was responsive. Didn't handle quite as well as a Tesla. But the Chinese market really isn't focused on performance as much as they are on luxury and comfort. So the car kind of was more luxurious. It had a softer ride than what we're used to here. They're a little bit less performance concerned in China. You just can't, I mean, you can't go around speeding. You can't be launching 0 to 100 on the roads. I mean, you'll end up in jail, you know, so there's cameras everywhere you drive. So, you know, you can't do that as much as you can here. So they focus more on comfort, extremely comfortable car. Like I said, these sales are very promising. I hope that they've kind of righted the ship and are on the right path now. I'm pulling for NIO.
Yeah, I hear that the Chinese vehicles in general have a kind of a marshmallow feel to their suspensions, but yeah. But that brings us to the end of our show, and I'd like to thank you all for joining us. If you have comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can leave them on the Inside EVs podcast post or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread, or even down below in the YouTube comment section. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom Logny is at Tomalog, TOMMOLOG, and Martin is at EV News Daily, and Kyle is at Auto Spec Motoring. I'm at Dominic_Y. Click and subscribe and tap the bell icon for notifications on YouTube, and we'll see you all next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.